Good morning, everyone. My name is Jennifer Cook. I'm director of the CSIS Africa program, and I want to welcome you all here this morning for what I think will be really an excellent and I think uplifting session. So we're delighted to have our guest, Omari Issa. I'll introduce in a moment. I think people are still coming in, but we'll get going. To start, I think there's been a strong tendency in Washington and the United States more broadly to view Africa through this fairly dark prism. Policymakers, the media, advocacy groups, think tanks, we've all tended to focus on the crises, the conflicts, the coup d'etats, poverty, underdevelopment, and humanitarian need. The challenges are many, and there is a well-warranted emphasis on resolving and mitigating the impact of these daunting problems. But in doing so, I think there's a tendency to overlook some of the very positive trends that are playing out on the continent, from the basic resilience and entrepreneurship that emerges as people navigate their way through difficult environments, to the much bigger macroeconomic trends that have helped drive fairly robust and sustained growth in much of the continent over the last 10 years. Commodity prices, new sources of energy and mining, those account for much of this growth surge, I think. But improved macroeconomic management, a nascent diversification, a growing consumer base, and a growing investor base are also, I think, part of the picture. They're big global investors who are taking note, and we've seen the surge of investment coming from China, India, Brazil, even Turkey, South Korea, the list goes on. And these opportunities, I think, are beginning to pique the interest of U.S. investors beyond the traditional investors in energy and minerals. But I think there remains a tendency within the U.S. business community to view the continent through this still dark prism. So the CSIS Africa program, that's myself, Richard Downey, and our program coordinator, Farha Tahir, is launching a new series titled Overcoming Barriers to Investment in Africa. This is part of the broader CSIS initiative on U.S. leadership and development that's led by Johanna Nesseth and Dan Rundy that explores how best to harness the power of the private sector in development. So in this series, the Africa program will seek to profile cases where governments, where subnational governments, where entrepreneurs and businesses are finding innovative ways to cut through some of these longstanding barriers to investment and growth. Our hope with this series is to try in a very small way to begin to shift the prism through which the United States, policymakers, development practitioners, private sector actors, the media, the broader public, view Africa, to highlight instances of positive change that warrant attention and support just as much as the crises of the day. Our view is that shifting this prism is not just important for the private sector to identify opportunities on which other investors are already beginning to capitalize, but to U.S. engagement more broadly on the continent. Our feeling is that a more optimistic, forward-looking approach that really plays to African successes and strengths as well as to U.S. strengths will ultimately be more relevant to African aspirations and more resonant with the continent's youthful population. This is important to the United States, I think, at this moment for its engagement in Africa, where it's going to need to define and sustain its relevance and influence in a far more diverse and competitive playing field. So to launch this series, we are just delighted and honored to welcome our guest today and profile the work of the Investment Climate Facility for Africa. This is an organization that's finding very innovative, relatively low-cost ways to work with African governments to break through some of these longstanding and sometimes actually fairly basic investment obstacles. Our guest has said some of these are just no-brainers. It's just nobody's set their minds to how to cut through them. Really getting at some of these issues that can unlock the growth and investment potential across the continent. So our guest today is Omari Issa. He's the organization's CEO. Tanzanian citizen, and the ICF is based in Tanzania, who's been 7 years with a program helping to improve the investment climate and remove these barriers. Omari has extensive business experience in the public and private sectors. He's worked in both Africa and abroad. First-hand experience of the realities of doing business in Africa. He worked as the executive director and COO of Celtel International. And prior to working at Celtel, spent 14 years with the IFC and 6 years with the World Bank. On meeting Mr. Issa, we found someone of energy, optimism, and real dedication. And I think you'll find this, as I said, kind of an uplifting session. And we're so glad that you could come to help us launch the series. I think Mr. Issa will say a few words, and then we're going to have a short video on the work of the ICF. Then we'll come back for remarks and interaction. So welcome to you all, and welcome to you, sir.
Thank you very much, Jennifer, and thanks to your colleagues as well. Thanks to CSIS for the warm hospitality. I've been working with them for now two months. I was here in February. We had a half-hour session, and they were very excited with what we're doing. I hope you will also be equally excited, if not more. For an audience like this one, it's really very difficult to gauge at the beginning the level of interest. Some are particularly interested in certain sectors, others in countries, others in just development issues. So what we did at ICF to be able to cater for an audience like this one, and there was a similar audience in The Hague last year, we developed a video that runs for about 20 minutes. It gives you a flavor of what ICF is, why ICF was set up, where ICF is doing business, and the reaction from those who have interacted with ICF. It's about 20 minutes long. I hope it will be exciting, that you will be able to be as active in the 20th minute as you will be in the second minute. And then after the video, we'll project just one or two slides to show you the results of a few projects before and after, so you can see the impact or the projects that we have supported, have had on the continent and in the specific countries. And thereafter, I would really like it to be a very interactive session. So I will speak very briefly after the video and after the slides, so as to allow a lot of time for interaction. Thank you very much.
Africa is a vibrant, diverse continent with a strong entrepreneurial spirit. It offers enormous potential for both domestic and international investors, and has been steadily delivering economic growth for the last few years.
Africa is rich in resources of all kinds. Africa is growing extremely fast, and for investors both from within and outside, it's the right place to be.
However, despite its potential, sub-Saharan Africa is consistently rated the world's least business-friendly region, with significant implications for economic growth and long-term poverty alleviation.
If you think about what slows down business anywhere in the world, but certainly in Africa, It's the real difficulty of getting things done. It's the registration of your business. It's the commercial courts and how slowly they work. It grinds people down.
ICF is working with receptive governments in collaboration with the private sector to try and address these issues.
The Investment Climate Facility, or ICF, became operational in July 2007 as a public-private partnership to remove barriers to investment in Africa.
Origins of the ICF go back to the Commission for Africa, which reported to the G8 meeting in Gleneagles in 2005. And essentially what they were saying is the best way to alleviate poverty and spread prosperity in Africa is to help Africa to grow economically.
One of our findings was that although Africa and many African countries have vast natural resources, they have labor resources, but they do not have a business climate that attracts both the local investor as well as the external investor.
ICF works to deliver fast, meaningful, and sustainable improvements to the continent's investment climate. Working in partnership with African governments, ICF project activity delivers practical improvements to the local business environment. Such improvements can significantly empower Africa's small and medium-sized enterprises, as well as increase investment levels by improving the continent's reputation as a place to do business. ICF is making Africa a better place to do business by tackling a particular issue on a project basis in a country or region where there is a full commitment from government and the local private sector. Once success has been achieved in one country, ICF works with other countries to share key learnings and introduce improvements. Key to ICF's success has been its ability to foster genuine public-private collaboration.
Just go look at the marketplaces anywhere in Africa. People say Africans aren't entrepreneurs. Just look at what happens. Look at the trading that takes place. The block is the governmental level. And now African governments are starting to realize that they're the barrier and they're saying who can help them. And the people that can help them are actually businesses. But not just multinational businesses. I want to emphasize that when you go in with a project, we work with local businesses. We take the local business view of what needs to be done. Unless this is subscribed to by local business, by local people, and by local governments, anything that we do will not have longevity. I understand that as you watch this, you've got a high level of skepticism, and that's good. But take a look at what we are able to do.
ICF's approach is working, delivering positive, measurable results quickly and efficiently across the continent. Recognition of the importance of investment climates as a key economic driver is at an all-time high, with a significant number of African governments taking steps to improve their business environments. ICF takes a thematic approach to project activity, concentrating on those it believes will have a maximum impact on the investment climate. One such area is land registration, where ICF is working with a number of countries to improve processes. Registered land improves security for investors, helps prevent boundary disputes, increases access to credit. Part of the Rwandan Investment Climate Project, co-funded by the government and ICF, has digitalized the National Land Center, delivering significant improvements to land titling and registration. Out of the many services offered is the indexing of land files of the three districts of Kigali. Indexing being a process where data from hard copies, like paper files kept in archives, is converted into a format that can be stored onto a computer so as to avoid problems like backlog.
It's a lot easier now because we have the information stored in our computers and we have registered every citizen who comes to us with the rightful documents. Other problem we faced are when two or more people would dispute over one plot, but now we know the rightful owner of the plot according to the information we have stored in our computers.
With the project, we now have shortened up the time taken to register a property. So for a business person, it's very important when the time is reduced. It saves money for the business and it improves the business climate.
But today it is easy to get the land documents. In a business, time is money.
Another area where ICF is focusing its efforts is improving commercial justice. A healthy business environment is as much about investor confidence as it is about opportunities and resources. So a weak or ineffective judicial system can have a severe and direct impact on a country's investment climate. In Zambia, ICF has supported the government to digitalize the judiciary.
As a judiciary, we think that it's a very, very important project. It's a project that we think will help to decongest the courts in terms of reducing the backlog. We also think that with this technology, cases will not be adjourned anyhow because a file in the registry has gone missing. This will be a thing of the past because there's an electronic version of that file.
We want to achieve a scenario where court proceedings are completed in good time as compared to the challenges that we have had in the past.
In Rwanda, the Investment Climate Project has modernized the judiciary. Four new commercial courts have dramatically improved the efficiency of dispute resolution.
Besides equipping the commercial courts with furniture, IT equipment, internet facilities, we have also managed to acquire the digital court recording equipment, which helps to capture the audio and visual part when the court proceeding is taking place.
Before, it was really a big problem because, you know, in business, time is money. And when we used ordinary courts, it was not easy for us to get a kind of the judgment, speedy judgment.
The investment climate has to be improved because we live in a globalized world. Now it's all about competition. If I were an investor and I thought there was a poor investment climate in Rwanda, I would never invest my money here. If there's not fair justice in this country, if there is corruption, if there is not good governance, the investors will never come here. They'll go elsewhere. But it's lucky that we have good governance. Now we have an improved investment climate due to all these commercial courts. Cross-border and international trade have significant potential to help fuel Africa's economic growth. More efficient customs processes will help stimulate new business opportunities, enhance competitivity, and ensure greater compliance. In Senegal, ICF has worked with the government to refine the paperless electronic customs administration system. With this paperless project, we became part of the whole logic of the trade chain, both for pre-customs clearance and customs clearance. We have worked towards a very strong integration with the customs IT system, but we were also interested in post-custom clearance, also in all port operations and removal of goods.
Through this very broad coverage today, we are in a position to say that in Senegal, we have one of the most completed projects, because I don't know of any project in Africa working on the electronic processing of all external formalities. And we have been able to achieve this because of the substantial help we received from ICF.
Très significatif.
ICF is also improving the transit of goods as well as the region's reputation as a place to do business by facilitating the improvement of infrastructure. In Tanzania, ICF is working in partnership with the Tanzanian police force to improve the movement and security of goods and services.
The challenges we were facing mostly were a lot of roadblocks around the roads. A journey that was supposed to take about maybe 2 or 3 days will take us about 5 or 6 days, simply because we have too many stops.
Through Tanzania Police and ICF working together, we've been able to reduce the number of police checkpoints or police roadblocks along the Dar es Salaam Rusumo Highway from 58 to 15. And we are planning to use technology in managing the traffic along the highway. We've been impressed very much by ICF's assistance. The investment climate of this country is improving, so I'm very optimistic that the future of this country will be very good.
Improving access to credit for SMEs, the engine of Africa's future growth, is also a key area of focus for ICF. Central to this is improving business registration processes, with important additional benefits for government and civil society in terms of formalizing the economy. In Rwanda, a new one-stop shop for business registration has been established.
To the Rwanda Investment Climate Project, business registration in Rwanda was extremely costly, very lengthy. Several procedures were involved. In 2005, before the Rwanda Investment Climate Project, we had about 600 companies being registered annually. After the project in 2008, we're now down to 2 procedures to register your business, and it costs just under $25. And as a result, we've seen an exponential increase in the number of companies that are being registered. So at the end of 2010, we had about over 5,000 companies registered. Our online registration systems are fully functional, and we've made online registration completely free so that we can incentivize our population to access these services and to use them.
Learnings from the project in Rwanda were used to develop a similar project in Burkina Faso. Because of the ICF, we have been able to visit this experience, and so we too have learned lessons from this country. We said to ourselves, if they are doing it like that, why can't we do it better? And we signed up to this process. That's the first thing. The second thing is this genuine sharing of experiences through the workshops that ICF has organized in Tanzania and elsewhere, which we have been able to attend. We have been able to make contacts with other beneficiaries of the ICF project, and we have managed to maintain these contacts. And in terms of funding too, we have found the ICF process to be really flexible. ICF prides itself on its fast, flexible, and results-oriented approach that is delivering tangible improvements to the business climate across the continent, and demand for ICF services is accelerating.
It's a public-private partnership, and it works very much as a private company would do. It identifies issues, it moves in quickly, it takes decisions rapidly, and gets results fast.
ICF approach is, one is the business model they are using. We have timeline, we have to set the goals, the outputs, and time frame. You have to work hard to meet the expected result.
What impressed me a lot about the approach of ICF is that they had absolutely no external impositions or external agendas. We as a government, had a very clear vision of where we wanted to take business registration, of how we wanted to improve the investment climate in our country. And ICF came on board, looked at that vision, and then dedicated their resources to making that vision become a reality. So it was working hand in hand with the government to achieve the government's vision, which was quite exemplary.
Moving forwards, ICF is focused on meeting demand for its services and accelerating the pace of investment climate improvements across the continent.
We have observed over the years that we need to ensure that the improvements that have been made are sustainable, not only over the lifetime of ICF, but well beyond. So we are working hard to develop capacity to ensure there will be sustainability. But also, we are linking these countries so that they can share the knowledge that has been acquired in the respective countries. So for us, going forward, we want to ensure that we disseminate the lessons learned, the best practices that have been undertaken, so that more countries take up the challenge to improve the investment climate.
ICF's achievements to date have only been possible due to the active and generous support of governments, development partners, and the private sector.
You know, the call to action is simple. Take a good look at what we're doing and join us.
We had a concept which is now proven in practice. The work which has been done in partnership with government and hand-in-hand with the private sector is demonstrating what can be done quickly to improve the climate for investment in meaningful and measurable ways. And this is freeing up local business. It's making it much easier for potential foreign investors to move in and start their businesses quickly. And we're already seeing the benefits in terms of the stimulus that is giving to economic growth. That is the only measurement of ICF's success. Does it in time lead to improved economic growth? And the evidence is now there for everybody to see. So please get engaged. Get engaged now, because we are involved in some work which will have a lasting impact on the entire continent.
And so I would say to governments, look at yourselves, look at your structures, and see whether there isn't a need for reform. To the private sector, I would say be less inhibited in putting forward suggestions about how to improve the climate in the country for investment.
Thank you very much for staying on. I think you've been able to see the results of some of the projects, not all the projects. Since putting this video together, more countries have come on board, in particular Tunisia and Nigeria. So we have projects in those countries that they're not on the map that you saw. Instead of 40 projects, it's now 47. Instead of 29 countries that are touched by ICF, it's now 32. I think the main difference, I would like to really spend a few minutes talking about, you know, how we do support these countries. It's a very different approach. You heard one of the speakers there, the former co-chair, saying that, you know, we actually go out and operate under private sector principles. Now, under the private sector principles, usually, you know, people go where demand is. You know, you go to sell your products or to market your products if you believe demand exists. So when we're putting up our strategy in 2007, we recognize that if we wanted to improve the investment climate on the continent, in each and every of the more than 50 countries, we would fail miserably because that is not feasible. We decided to target 10 to 15 countries that we believed were receptive, that we believe were ready, we believe they were willing, and also had the commitment to make the necessary changes. And the strategy was to work with those countries, then to use the learnings from those countries and communicate with other countries that were less receptive and less willing. And within those countries that we identified, we went further and said we would like to identify champions, work with those champions who can actually make the changes possible. It's one thing being told what to do, it's quite another to actually do what one wants to do. That's as good as my English is. If somebody wants to do something and you're there to help him or her do it, it's a lot easier than to try and tell that person, do it this way. And let me use one example, the example of regional integration and trade facilitation. We all talk about regional integration. We all talk about trade facilitation. This is the big thing. This is the newest thing on the menu, and everybody wants to talk about it. Policymakers all over the world are talking about it. But there are issues on the ground that need to be addressed. Otherwise, these policies will never materialize. And you saw one of the projects there. The roadblocks in Tanzania. Now, we looked at East Africa, we looked at West Africa as well, and we felt that East Africa was more receptive. And then within East Africa, we tried to work with Kenya, because the Northern Corridor, for those who are involved in East Africa, realize that there's more trade in the Northern Corridor than on the other one. But there was resistance. There was no willingness. There was no commitment. I met with senior government officials in those countries. There was no commitment. And in Tanzania, there was, you saw the Inspector General of Police, who was very receptive. And he said, yes, we want to do this project. You got a glimpse of that project. But in reality, let me tell you, from Dar es Salaam to the border with Rwanda, the border point is called Rusumo. It was mentioned in the video. It's a distance of 1,300 kilometers, approximately 800 miles. There were 58 roadblocks. Okay? This is not unusual. You go to Uganda, you go to Kenya, you go to Nigeria, you go to Ivory Coast, you find these roadblocks. Many of them are not official roadblocks. And you are stopped at one roadblock, you are asked a number of questions. You go to the next one, you are asked a different set of questions 58 times. You saw one of the chairman of the Truck Owners Association saying, you know, instead of 5 days, it now takes 2 days. In a period of 8 months, we were able to reduce the number of roadblocks from 58 to 15. It's very significant, the transit time from 5 days to 2 days. Now, when you're in a competitive market, the 3 days can make or break your business. The cost along the route as well, I think, you know, let's be transparent and say that many of these roadblocks are created unofficially. It's a way to basically sustain people's lives along the route. And removing them requires full support, you know, requires political will at the highest. We've got the President of Tanzania who is fully committed, the Prime Minister is fully committed, and the Inspector General of Police is also fully committed. And the intention is really to reduce within this year the number of those roadblocks from 15 to 7, and next year from 7 to 3. There are many large projects that are being supported by a number of development partners in creating single border posts. So between Rwanda and Tanzania, Rusumo, or between Kenya and Tanzania at Namanga, there would be one place where you can do all the formalities. But the real challenge is between that roadblock and the destination. Okay? And that's what we are looking at. If we can manage to help that, then obviously trade will increase, not only between countries, but also within the country. For example, people living along that route, farmers, traders, and so on, will also benefit. It means they can sell their goods at much more competitive prices than they are able to do today. Now, from the police itself, actually, for them, movement of goods is not the primary objective. For them, safety and security is primary objective. And what will this project do? This project provides the necessary IT infrastructure. There will be a database to be shared by the Revenue Authority, to be shared by the Director of Criminal Investigations, etc. As it is today in Tanzania, if I were to commit a traffic offense and lost my license, I easily go to the next town and get another driver license because there is no information. If goods have been hijacked, there is no information to be shared because all of it is manual. You saw the stacks of files. So the benefits go well beyond just moving goods between one point and the other. Now, many people have criticized us for not publicizing the achievements that have been achieved so far. Very few people know about ICF. But we took the decision early on that we are not going to publicize ICF until after we begin to see results on the ground. In the video, you saw that 12 projects had been completed. That was midpoint last year. Now we have more than 20 projects that have been completed. And for businesses, if there is anybody here in business, I think one of the biggest concerns that we have witnessed going from country to country is contract enforcement. You know, people are hesitant to invest because they say, look, the judiciaries are very slow, they are not transparent, and it takes years to resolve a dispute. As an example, you know, in Rwanda, when we started, there were more than 3,000 commercial disputes that had been pending for more than 5 years. All those disputes have now been resolved. In Zambia, when we did the due diligence 3.5 years ago, all the proceedings in the courtroom were manual. 65% of the judge's time was spent on actually recording or writing down what was being uttered in the courtroom. If you go into the courtrooms today in Lusaka and now in Ndola, everything is state of the art. The judges have screens in front of them. The lawyers representing the parties have screen. But in addition, there is a screen as large as this one for the public. And as the person in the courtroom speaks, whatever is spoken is captured digitally and projected. It's live for everybody to see. And at the end of the day, a CD is produced. So the transcript is available at the end of the day. It's impossible to tamper with evidence. The process is much faster. Judges then don't have to go and summarize the deliberations in the courtroom. The process moves much faster. You heard from the business people in Rwanda, the same in Zambia. So this is happening in more countries, and what we are doing, what you also saw, is we are trying to share all the good stuff between countries. Zambia learned from Tanzania, Tanzania learned from Rwanda, Mauritius is doing a mediation center after having seen what Rwanda had done. Land registration is in Burkina, in Sierra Leone, in Rwanda. And we are continuing to share the knowledge. Now, perhaps the last point I would like to make in terms of knowledge sharing is that we have recognized that actually you can get these projects implemented fairly quickly, but the accounting aspects within the country, the project teams, are extremely weak in terms of accounting, because this is normally an area that is left aside. If you go to any municipality, if you go to any government institution today, you will discover that actually accounts are way behind. If we are talking here in 2012, you'll be lucky to get audited accounts for 2010, 2009 perhaps. So countries are very far behind. So we are now moving in this direction. We had a workshop in Dakar in at the beginning of the year. We have another one in Nairobi later this month, where we bring the project teams from all these countries with accounting firms, and we go through the process of, you know, the importance of keeping proper accounts from day one. So this we are sharing. And also at a higher level, we had an investment climate summit 2 years ago in May 2010. The next one will be in Arusha at the end of May in conjunction with the ADB annual meeting. So if you're planning to attend the ADB annual meeting or you're planning to be in the region, let me know and we'll extend an invitation to you. There will be more than 2,000 delegates there. And we are going to use the opportunity to, on one hand, continue to press on governments to continue to improve their investment climates, and on the other, to also plead to businesses to begin to respond to these measures that are being taken. In our view, the investment climate is improving. When we started with Rwanda in 2007, it was ranked at 167, I think, in the Doing Business Indicator. Today, Rwanda is at 45. We look at Burkina Faso, Liberia, Mauritius, Zambia. All these countries have moved up in the rankings, not only in Africa, but globally. So the climate is improving. And we plead to business people represented here to respond by investing. Let me turn it to you if you have burning questions, if you have comments, if you have suggestions. I'll be more than happy to respond where I can. Thank you very much. Yeah, I think.
Well, Thank you for that, for the film, which was well worth the wait. CSIS has a bottleneck on the technology aspect, so maybe you can work with us to break it. I wanted to, it sounds like more and more countries are kind of approaching you rather than you going out to the countries. And for example, Nigeria, how did that work? Are you working at the federal level? Or are you working at a state government level? Or do you work solely at the national level? Or how does that process come about in working with a country? Is it something they already have in mind? Or do you sit together and kind of analyze what best you can do and what best the needs are?
Thanks, Jennifer. I think what I said earlier is that we look at countries, and then within countries we look at champions. Okay, so I use the example of Tanzania, where we've got the Inspector General of Police as the champion. Now, in the case of Nigeria, it's a very large country. The needs are enormous, and we were looking for champions within Nigeria, and we found two governors, one in Lagos, the other one in Edo State. And in discussions with Lagos State government officials and the private sector in Lagos State, it was agreed that the priority should be to really set up an arbitration center in Lagos, because businesses were looking for ways to resolve their disputes much more quickly. So fortunately, we got board approval last week, and we will be working with Lagos State to set up our arbitration processes. And we are, in parallel, we are talking to Edo State, and I cannot say in which area we will help, because that depends on the demand on the ground.
Thank you. Good morning. I'm Femi Akimbi, and I'm from Nigeria. Thanks for your efforts. I think it's a job well done. My question, Jennifer, I've kind of covered some of it. In Nigeria, I would like to see you kind of work with the federal level. And if it's that is not available at this point, I could make that access available. I'd like to know if you have any programs in the area of IT technology to help alleviate some of the issue of transparency, anti-corruption, and efficient government. In example, there are some areas now when any local government got a contract to do certain thing, the IT department will post it online, and in the local government, where that whatever is supposed to be built, they will have a signboard posted that we've given this guy or these people here 10% of the money. Have they done 10% when they get me for their next check? In the area of election fraud, that will help us a great deal. And lastly, I'd like to know if you have any new program in regional infrastructural development finance scheme. Thank you.
I'll take the questions. Mima Nedeljković with the Schaefer Global Group down in Baton Rouge, Louisiana. We're in agri-industry, both farming and processing. So I have a question on that and then a comment on the corridors. The land registry, I noticed that, obviously, is the biggest headache always in the farming side. And I think the examples, okay, it's a smaller country, Rwanda, and looked like mostly urban land titling. Are you tackling, or are you being asked to tackle, or what are your perspectives on dealing with larger tracts of farmland? That's the question. On the corridors, obviously we move product across countries and across borders, so it is a big issue. The question I have is, how do you install? You've gone from 59, I think, to 15 in Tanzania, looking to get down to 3. One would ask, well, why even 3? Can have at each border. But the real question is, on that commitment, since many of them are informal, How do you keep that 15 from becoming 35 rather than 3?
Hi, I'm Justin Tinsey with the Corporate Council on Africa. My question is about your partners and who you collaborate with, namely other development institutions. What success have you had so far in your collaboration efforts, or if you have, and what hope is there that there'll be more collaboration? That's it.
So let's take those. And on Femi's issue, one of the things that a number of folks from the private sector have talked to me about is the procurement, procurement systems generally, and kind of the opacity of that, the slowness of that. So I think that tacks on a little bit to what you were talking about. Okay, that's a good set of questions.
Yeah. If you look closely at the projects that we have supported, be it land registration, business registration, roadblocks, customs, tax administration, commercial justice, you know, modernization of judiciaries. A significant part of what has gone into those projects is actually IT. And when we started, there was skepticism, even criticism, that we were actually funding IT, that the projects were about IT. And our position, which we tried to explain over and over, was that actually we were trying to get people to do business differently. Instead of filling in a form like customs in Senegal, you fill in forms for 7 agencies and you deal with 1 agency. After you are done, you go to the second agency, you fill the second form, then you go to the third agency, and it's 7 times. 80 to 90% of the information on each of the 7 forms is the same. So you repeat that information 7 times. But at each point, there is potential for bribery. You know, you want your form to move much faster, pay a little bit. Delays and so on. So we work together with the customs authority, with the private sector in Senegal, and it was agreed, including the banks, to have only 1 form that is filled at the same time and emailed to all the 7 agencies simultaneously. So the process that used to take days now takes 7 hours, maximum 7 hours. You lodge in your application in the morning with pre-clearance, then in the afternoon, including the payment at the bank, you get acknowledgement. It's done. So that's how we're working with IT for each specific project. We are introducing new ways of doing things. The roadblocks, you know, if I can link that up, you know, the 15 stations along that route, the police people have BlackBerries with information about a truck, a driver, the goods on that truck. And we have in our agreement that if the number of roadblocks come up, then we give the police 7 days to address the issue, and if not, we suspend or cancel our support to the police. We engage independently consultants who jump on those trucks and go and actually give us a report that, look, I was stopped here for 2 minutes, I was asked to pay $0.50 or, 50 cents or $1 and so on. So we've got the monitoring aspect on that. The same with the judiciary. You know, everything is now IT. It's very difficult to tamper with evidence. Now, we cannot do everything in a country. You know, we are a small entity. We are supported by a number of development partners. And what we do is collaborate very closely with them. So, give an example. In Liberia, where USAID, the World Bank, DFID, the Africa Development Bank are helping to modernize the port of Monrovia. I went there 4 years ago and went through the port of Monrovia, spent 3 hours from beginning to end, and as I was about to leave the port, I looked puzzled and I asked the Commissioner of Customs, I said, did I overlook something? Or is this the correct situation? And he said, what do you mean? He said, I didn't see a single computer. didn't see a laptop. All I saw was stacks and stacks of files. And you're modernizing the port. It will take 5 years. You don't have a database today. You don't know which container came in when, what value, etc. So we started. We said, look, we can help you. And with a modest sum of $300,000, we're able to provide computers, more importantly, training to the people in customs. And now they have a database. So we work, you know, together with the other partners. They tell us what issues there are. For example, many of them are now asking us to go to South Sudan and help with the judiciary, because they feel this will be very important for investors going into South Sudan. But the request has actually come first from the development partners, and we've sent a team to Sudan. So we collaborate all the time. Before I come to procurement infrastructure, we are unable to finance infrastructure because our facility is small. We have support for about $170 million. You can spend that on a single road between Dar es Salaam and Kigoma. So what we are willing to do is actually help with legislation and regulation, if the country is willing. What we have done so far is help Rwanda, and we actually looked at the whole continent with regard to power, and we realized that power was very important for investors. Investment climate, to be conducive, you need a reliable power supply. So we looked at the whole continent. Actually, we engaged consultants. We've got the data for each and every country. We came down to six, and we talked to the six countries, and the most receptive was Rwanda. Rwanda said, look, we would like to do something for the sector. So our support is actually building capacity in Rwanda for at the ministry level, at the regulatory level, preparing tariffs, template contracts, and so on, and training people in the power sector. That's what we are doing, and that is facilitating investment from the private sector in the power generation, power distribution, and power transmission. That's what we do. And we've made this offer to other countries, and if they are willing, we're willing to go and extend support. Procurement. Procurement is a bottleneck. And let me use an example. Being Tanzanian, I guess I can say without any fear or anything. We supported the judiciary in Tanzania. And Tanzania has a public procurement act, so they go through procurement in a very rigorous manner. They advertise 60 days, then they go through this process, and the act was put in place through support by many development partners. It's really like it's supposed to be bulletproof, no loopholes. And they brought in the evaluation report and said, okay, we're going to buy 110 or so computers and laptops and printers and what have you for the four courts in Dar es Salaam, three courts. We looked at the unit costs and we said, no, this is not acceptable. They said, yeah, we went through a proper procurement process, and we said it's not possible. So we said, look, you here you have HP, you have IBM, you have Dell, you have Sony, and you have Canon. Okay, they are represented in town. So let's call the dealers in town, and they were called, and we said, look, we want X number of laptops, minimum specifications, because if you specify, for example, for a laptop, you specifically want 200 gigabytes of hard drive. If somebody has a laptop with 250 gigabytes, you know, it's an issue. So they have to find the laptop, or they have to order the hard drives that meet the exact specification. If you say exactly 14-inch, you know, screen, somebody has a 15-inch screen, and so on. So we said, what are the minimum specs? We agreed, and it was Tuesday. In our offices, together with people from the judiciary, all the dealers were there, we said, okay, if we now invite you to submit your bids, how long will it take you? They said, we'll deliver on Friday morning. The same week. We'll deliver Friday. It's not 60 days. It's not this. And they delivered on Friday morning. We were there. We opened. The saving was 40%. Okay. So in all our projects, we insist on using the ICF procurement guidelines, which are very, very simple to follow, very transparent, and everybody can understand. You don't need a procurement specialist, which is what you need. And if you go to these governments, they have a procurement department with maybe one individual responsible for overseeing the procurement by government in that country. And at the beginning, we encountered delay after delay, 3 months, 6 months. If I give you the example of Rwanda, I went to Rwanda. They were waiting to order printers because the procurement process was still ongoing. And I said, look, are you going to order the printer from United States or from Dubai or from Nairobi? No, from the dealers here. And I said, okay, so why is it taking so long? So I made noises. At 2 o'clock, the president of the Supreme Court called me and said, they've delivered the printers this afternoon. You can literally go and buy the printer in the shop. So these procurement processes, you know, they are so elaborate. And the vendors, if I can, they are aware of all this complexity. They also are aware that it takes forever to get the order. And even after you get the order, to get the payment also, you need to be pushing almost every day to be able to get that check. So they build in their cost. You know, this is an order, but it's going to take so much. I need to have a dedicated person who will push this, so it pushes up the price. So we need to make them very simple, very straightforward, that people, you know, involved in project implementation can all understand them. And that's what we have. You know, we have very simple procurement guidelines that even the people I was talking about, you know, the accounting people, can understand, can follow them, can adhere to them. And very, very transparent. Because for me, actually, procurement, you know, if you're going out to bid, you're looking for, one, transparency, two, value, and, of course, delivery time. Three critical factors on procurement, and very simple to follow through.
Do you want to say something on rural land?
On land, yes, I have it on land. Again, it depends on willingness by the country. What we have offered, for example, in the case of Tanzania, those who are working on Tanzania, they know that there's a huge, huge project, the Southern Corridor. A number of businesses are involved. It was even discussed at Davos. And what we've offered in terms of ICF support is in the following areas. One is to survey the areas and to actually give title to the farmers who are there, because those farmers are locked in at the moment. You know, they cannot sell the property, they cannot go to the banks and obtain funding because they have no piece of paper that says this farm belongs to them. So that is one area. The second area, we've offered to help develop template contracts for offtake arrangements, so that these farmers from whom the big entities will be outsourcing, you know, there will be a contract that has been looked at by a neutral party, and we believe that this will minimize issues going forward. But in the case of Rwanda, it's not only the urban areas, it's actually a national project by end of next year, every Rwandese will have title to his or her land. It's a whole country. It's a massive project. In Burkina Faso, USAID is helping on land registration. We focused on Ouagadougou and Bobo. And I can tell you, in the last 2 years, there have been more titles issued in Burkina Faso than they were in the previous 30 years.
Great. Let's take another round here. We have a gentleman here with a lady over here. And I saw another hand, but let's start with those.
Thank you very much. My question surrounds the issue of broadening the number of people in the country that contributes to the economy, and whether there is any initiative in higher education to collaborate with universities and colleges for business education and entrepreneurship training, because much of your discussion is strengthening the traditional approach to doing business based on existing policies. Do you have any opportunities you're providing for the education system, especially in higher education, to bring a new approach to inclusion and to bringing this information to the consumers as a transformation of culture in these countries?
Thank you. Could you elaborate on what type of support do you provide to police and customs authorities when you were speaking about roadblocks project? You said that in case you hear any violation, you will suspend the support. What type of support do you provide? And also, is this type of project could be considered as sustainable or not? Thank you.
And then one here.
You mentioned you have encountered challenges in engaging with the Kenyan government. Has there been any progress in this, particularly in regards to regional integration? And secondly, how exactly is the private sector involved, especially the U.S.? Is it technical assistance or just donations?
Thank you. Okay, we'll take one more if you
okay.
can handle it through.
All right, no problem.
David Throop, CSIS. My concern is about sustainability. I understand that you can pull your funding whilst the project is actually running, but what happens when the project is completed and your funding disappears? And that leads on to the larger question. Jennifer talked about the economic performance of Africa over the last decade, and one can think of a whole series of reasons, demographic change, demand from China and India, and so on. But having taken those account, you are dealing with a fundamental political economy. And the question is that all your interventions and all your reforms in the long term can only be sustained by fundamental change in the nature of the political economy of Africa. So that the way African governments and African individuals regard the state and regard business is going to have to change. How can you bring about a fundamental alteration in the sort of clientelistic network of politics and business in Africa? That seems to me absolutely key to the sustainability of what you're suggesting.
Okay. Let me start maybe in the reverse order. If you go into a maybe less Kenya, less Nigeria, less Ghana, but the likes of Tanzania, Rwanda, Zambia, etc. There is a sense that when we talk about the private sector, when we talk about improving the investment climate, we are actually talking about improving the investment climate for foreigners, not for nationals. Why? Because a larger part of the economy is in the hands of foreigners. So long-term wise, if you want to address the issue of sustainability, you want to make sure that the locals actually have a significant stake in the economy. And to do that, there are so many things that one needs to do. The gentleman raised the issue of education. You've got, you know, if you go to a typical African country today, the youth represent, the youth meaning up to 30 years old, they represent more than 50% of the population. Many of them have actually not run a business. Many of them don't know how to run a business. Many of them cannot do prepare a business plan. But you have barriers after barriers. You know, these individuals cannot enter the mainstream line. These individuals cannot start a business. You saw in the video in Rwanda, it used to cost $443 to register a business. We've just finished a project, first phase of project with OHADA, where the minimum requirement to start a business was $2,000. These young people coming out of university schools and so on, they don't have $2,000. They can't start a business. They can't register a business because the minimum requirement to start a business is $2,000. They don't have that. We've worked with OHADA, and now legislation is in place in the 17 countries. You can start a business with $100. It's a beginning, you know, so you begin to bring people in, and then you train them, you know, the education. You have to involve the education system from, you know, business planning, business management, etc. And these skills are not there. So, you know, ICF on its own cannot do all these things in a span of 7 years. And we are saying we will tackle the areas that affect businesses most dramatically. We've talked about business registration, land registration. The only collateral an average African has is land. Okay? And the land they have is without title. They cannot go to a bank and say, I have 100 acres here, and then I would like to borrow against that, because they have no title. It's only the people in the community who know that this land belongs to Omar Issa. The rest don't know, and that is not bankable. So that's another one. Commercial justice. You know, the more difficult it is to get through the court system, the more manual it is, the more difficult it is for the smallest business person in the country. The big guys can afford to hire lawyers. They can afford to wait for a year. The small guys can't. Customs. The big guys can afford to engage clearing agents. They can have people, you can have a fully fledged department that is geared towards clearing goods through customs. If you have a small business, you can't. You know, you are running a business, you're looking for a market, you're chasing contractors, you're doing this. The last thing you want is to be chasing the customs authority. Paying taxes is a pain. Okay? Paying taxes is a pain, and we are working with a number of tax administration in the country, I mean in, on the continent. And it takes days, weeks, months to file your tax returns and to pay. We are now automating that country after another. We're making it easy to file papers online, to make payment online. But legislation in a number of countries does not allow for that to be done. So we start with legislation so that e-filing and e-payment becomes feasible. So all these are roadblocks. Not just on the road, but all these are roadblocks to people wanting to do business. And until we get to a point where we actually have a lot of people in a given country involved in the businesses themselves, you will still have the politicians up there able to do this and that. But for these, for the majority of people, you need to make it easy to register a business, land, clear goods through customs, to file your taxes, to run your business. So the little resources they have should be devoted to running a business rather than to go around the red tape. And in terms of sustainability, you saw in the video I was saying this is where we are focusing on more and more. We are now educating the public much more. In the case of the roadblock, somebody asked, what would happen. We launched a few weeks ago a two-hour live radio program whereby the truck drivers were there, the truck owners were there, the police were there, ICF were there, a live program, people being asked to call in and people being informed of what is happening. There are flyers going on along the route to say, if you are stopped at a point that is not designated, please SMS this number, please call this number. So that's a program that is going on. In almost every project we are involved in, we are setting up customer care centers. This is, whether customs authorities or tax authority, police, where we are setting up communication centers. And communication is not the traditional PR, press releases, and event management, but actually communicating to people what can be done, what is being done, and for people to call in and register their complaints online with live TV programs, live radio programs. Kenya, we are hoping to have a project in Kenya. We are hoping to take it to our board, which will meet at the end of May. And this is a single window through Kentrade. But there have been challenges. We will continue to have challenges. Everybody who has been working on Kenya understands what I'm saying. But we haven't given up. We found a few champions in Kenya who are willing to make sure that this thing happens. And involving the private sector, it's not just the funding that they give us. There is also the data. When you talk about moving goods between countries, the people who have hands-on experience are the likes of Coca-Cola, who support us, the likes of Unilever, who support us, because they are moving goods all the time. So they know, they can share the experiences with us, and they participate. And we have 6 monthly sessions with our contributors where we talk about our projects, the experiences, and what we are likely to do in the following 6 months. I guess that addresses all the questions.
And we are at time, so well done. Thank you very much. I think that was great, and I think the idea of kind of building this constituency and changing expectation among kind of the small businessmen and women, I in terms of kind of changing demands on the government, I mean, I think these ICF can't do everything, but it's kind of chipping away in that way. And I hope that your work will expand, and I hope it inspires other groups to be kind of taking the same kind of hands-on, basic, get at the basics first approach. Please join me in thanking Omari. I think that was excellent, excellent discussion, and we'll look forward to seeing you back in Washington and hearing the continued progress of ICF.
Thank you very much.
Thanks very much.